And we're back on Wake Forest Today. I'm Grayson Felton.
And I'm your other host, Justin Adler. On Wake Forest Today, we'll be exploring the symptoms of alcohol use disorders and how they manifest themselves within the Wake Forest population. In addition, we will dive into possible treatments for this disease, as well as how to make them more accessible for all people. First up, we'll be interviewing Abby Anderson, a senior event coordinator for the Neuroscience Club at Wake Forest University. In addition, we will also be interviewing Dr. Terry Blumenthal, who is a distinguished member of our psychology department. So tune in now to hear more. So today I will be meeting with Abby Anderson, who is the event coordinator of the Neuroscience Club at Wake Forest. And I just wanted to ask you a few questions about what you knew about neuroscience and alcohol use disorders, as well as the drinking culture at Wake.
Great.
So my first question for you is, would you mind giving a brief overview of how alcohol is able to influence your senses and bodily functions?
I would say that it leads to more less thought out decision making, more doing things off of impulse rather than thinking about your decisions. It depends on whether you're talking about like really extreme like blacking out or whether it's sort of just like low level drinking. But I would say like for low level drinking, like loss of senses, like loss of motor skills pretty much, and then can lead to more extreme things like loss of memory.
Sure. So Wake Forest is a pretty stressful place, a lot of work, a lot of high expectations with grades and stuff. So why do you think students would revert to alcohol use in the event of stress? And then how does that kind of connect to the last question I asked?
I think that in the event of stress, people look for a social connection a lot of the time. And I think that drinking and like going out to like these social parties is a pretty easy way to like connect with people socially when you're stressed and you feel like you're like a lot of times that there's a feeling that you're not good enough because of school and like whatever you do isn't good enough. So a way to get away from that is just like being with people, and then also like that usually leads to drinking because I don't know, at a school in a small town, I feel like that can be one of the only options sometimes, or it can seem like that is the case. And I think that the party culture specifically here can lend itself to like extreme drinking a lot of the times because the parties are in like a setting where like it's kind of like go hard or go home. Like people don't want to be just a little bit drunk, but they like it's like people find themselves to enjoy the parties more if they're like pretty extremely drunk.
Yep, it's very true. So that kind of leads to my next question. How do alcohol use disorder symptoms manifest themselves at Wake, since we are a pretty heavily involved Greek life school?
Mm-hmm. I would say I personally don't know a ton of people who drink on like regular school days, but I know that definitely exists. Like people will just like have a drink at night or like either during like doing their work or just like after they do their work, or they just like instead of doing their work, people will just like start drinking. But I don't think that's like a hugely common problem at Wake, maybe at other schools more, or maybe just amongst certain groups. But I think like the main thing is like, I guess like Wednesday through Saturday, like big binge drinking, and like on like a Saturday afternoon, for example, it can seem like the only thing to do is just like get drunk and go stand around with people, and like a darty is like day party is what they call it. Mm-hmm. And I don't think that's necessarily like an alcohol use like abuse problem.
Sure.
As much as just like it can more be seen as like a problem with the social culture, because I mean, I guess it could like get definitely is a problem if you're looking at like the age problem. Like most of the people at these parties are probably under 21 because mostly only seniors are 21.
Right.
But I think that a lot of like other social and like other kinds of activities can like just be put aside because drinking seems to be like the dominant thing to do, mm-hmm. which can kind of reduce a lot of other opportunities to get involved in different things.
Sure. So building off that, how can we make changes in the drinking culture to make it more safe and kind of give people more of a healthier outlet to express themselves more?
I think that's kind of that's like the big question right now. Not just at Wake, but at every college campus.
Right.
Because like Greek life is like has its cons, obviously. Like it can be very like exclusive, and like if it puts like certain groups in more danger of getting in trouble than others, whatever. But like also it makes a safe environment for partying, like safer than just like a bunch of kids like throwing a party at a house, which can be like it would be very hard for the campus to control something like that. But so I think like Greek life as it is right now seems to be like have its advantages in that regard.
Mm-hmm.
But I think like as a lot of people say, like as the acceptance rate of Wake goes down, there are more kids that are accepted to Wake that didn't drink and party in high school, and therefore they come to Wake and like have a really extreme drinking problem and just like want to party all the time because they finally have the freedom to do that. And I don't really see that changing much mm-hmm. in the coming years because I think that just is a part of going to a intense academically school. And but as for like, yeah, I think the most like important awareness that needs to be made is with like sexual assault, and I think like the campus is doing a really good job of like increasing awareness of that and like putting in new programs to make sure that that doesn't happen as much, and like punishing the people who are accused of sexual assault. So I think that's the most important issue with alcohol abuse. Other than that, I think there's a growing culture of like clubs and like different activities to do, and like clubs like Outdoor Pursuits or Neuroscience Club, of course, or like other volunteering organizations. I think like a lot of people are trying to get more involved in other stuff like that rather than just partying, and like I think that's another effect of the acceptance rate going down, is that there are a lot more people who are interested in different things like academically and socially rather than just partying. And so that's a pretty cool development that's happening at Wake, I think.
Mm-hmm.
And also it's becoming more diverse as the acceptance rate goes down, so that like will bring a variety of people who are interested in doing different things rather than just partying with Greek life. So I think there's a long way to go, but we've come a long way.
Yeah. All right. Thank you so much for taking time to interview.
Yeah.
Today's segment, Justin and I will be exploring effective treatments for alcoholism and ways to support people with this disease. Today we have Dr. Terry Blumenthal here, who is a professor in the psychology department at Wake Forest University, to help us try to understand all the different treatments for people with alcohol use disorders. Thank you for being here.
You're welcome.
We'd like to start off with asking you how you got involved in researching psychology and alcohol.
I got involved in psychology research as an undergraduate. And then I did my doctoral dissertation at the University of Florida, and we looked at physiology in babies. Mm-hmm. Then I went on to become a faculty member, and when I was at Hamilton College in upstate New York, we started doing caffeine as a model of drug abuse. And I've done a lot more of that caffeine work here. Mm-hmm. My particular interest in alcohol is because My brother was the director of alcoholism and drug abuse treatment programs in the province that I grew up in Canada.
Okay, interesting.
So, what is the most successful or some of the most successful ways to help someone with an alcohol addiction?
Oh, yeah, that's a great question. I mean, if we really knew what's going to work for everybody, we would start with that. But different things work for different people.
Right.
So, family support... Social support. Alcoholics Anonymous is quite effective because of the social support. Abstinence, that, you know, and not starting. So I think that alcohol addiction counseling should begin, I think, in junior high school. Because if you don't start, it doesn't become a problem. College students, that's a particularly problematic population. You're away from home, you think there are no rules, so you start overdoing it. A lot of the people who have problem drinking in college end up, after graduation, not being problem drinkers, but a lot of them retain that behavior. So I think that social support and forgiveness and compassion are also important.
So going off, like you were talking about social support, are there types of social support that work better than others? For example, like emotional or instrumental?
Yeah, I mean, cognitive behavior therapy is good. Cognitive behavior therapy involves helping people change how they think about things. So, for instance, if you say, oh, man, I've had a rough day, I need a couple of beers. Maybe there's another way to deal with the end of a rough day. And so we help you think through that. Having family members or friends who support you, even if you fall down, okay? It's not about not falling down. It's about picking yourself back up. And if your friends help you with that, then you have a feeling that things aren't as desperate as you might have thought, okay?
So how much of maintaining sobriety has to do with your mental mindset and not exactly the treatment programs?
Well, I think the treatment programs won't work if you don't have the right mental mindset. If I go into a treatment program and I say, I don't have a drinking problem, but the court ordered me into this treatment program, it's probably not going to do much good for me.
So the first step is accepting that you have a problem.
Exactly right. Acknowledging the fact that it's probably something that I both should change and can change. Okay. The feeling of empowerment, I think, is very important.
I think that that answer acts as a good segue for my next question, which is there are a bunch of people out there that have this problem that kind of refuse to be helped, and there's an expression that says that you have to like inconvenience these people with this disease to realize that they have a problem. So I guess my question is, how do you help people that really keep refusing the help or keep pushing off the help?
Well, yeah, I mean, should you help people that don't want to be helped? The answer, I think, is you should always make help available, and you should make help easy, and you should make help free and anonymous. This is one of the problems. Some people say, well, I don't want to go to an alcohol counselor because if my boss finds out, I might get fired. Let's make it anonymous. I don't want to go to an alcohol counselor because I can't afford it. I don't have health insurance for that. Let's make it free. Alcohol problems are far more expensive than alcohol treatment. I mean, they cost you guys something in, you know, your parents paying taxes for programs that otherwise, you know, if we just fix the problem by helping the problem drinker, then we don't have to have these more expensive programs. So I think that outreach is important, but you can't force. You can lead a horse to water, but you can't make him drink. You know that? You can't force help on people, but you can make it easier for them.
So do you think, like obviously with treatment centers, they cost a lot of money, and especially for a lot of people, they don't have that money to pay for that. Do you think they should be free?
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. But a lot of people say, well, why should my taxes pay for your problem? You caused this in yourself. Well, the answer to that is my taxes are already paying for the results of your problem, the lost work, the accidents, the crime, okay? So if my taxes go towards building prisons, I'm already paying for your alcohol problem. It'd be a lot cheaper to nip it in the bud earlier.
So what are your thoughts about combining pharmacotherapy, like drugs such as naltrexone, disulfiram, with those cognitive therapy approaches?
Yeah, I think that's the best way to do it. It's more labor intensive, it's more expensive, but it's more effective.
Definitely. So do these drugs, are they included in that, like, free treatment?
I think that if you need medication to rehabilitate yourself, then I don't have a problem with my tax dollars paying for that. Mm-hmm. A lot of people look at that and talk about socialized medicine, which a lot of countries have, so that everybody's got the coverage that they need. A lot of people say that can't work here. But the programs that I'm proposing that should be free and widely available would have to be paid by the government.
Sure.
And I think that would be money well invested, to tell you the truth. Because you're preventing problems. Okay?
Yeah.
I mean, a football helmet is expensive.
Right.
So why do we make people wear them? Why not just let them go out there and bang heads? Well, because we know what will happen if they do. Okay, so many things that are expensive are less expensive than not having
them. What research have you done in the past that relates to alcohol or that might help with finding the best treatment programs for?
Yeah, good question. I haven't done alcohol research here at Wake Forest, but I have done a little bit of alcohol research with collaborative labs that I work with elsewhere. Okay. And basically we're looking at how alcohol depresses the brainstem reflexes, depresses your ability to react quickly to certain things. We haven't looked at it in treatment aspects because that's not really my area of highest interest. But I am interested in drug addiction. Alcohol, heroin, caffeine, nicotine, these all share many characteristics.
Exactly.
And so we've done a fair amount of caffeine addiction research here in my lab that tells us things about drug addiction in general, but not specifically alcohol.
So how can, so what suggestions can you make, like based off your research, to Wake Forest students and just college students in general about how to best use alcohol as our brains continue to?
Yeah. Look at some of the people who are getting stupid drunk and ask yourself if your mother would be proud to see you like that. Okay? Second thing is fake it. Pretend to be drunk. Go to the party, drink water or Sprite or whatever, and pretend to be drunk. It's easy to act drunk, right? Mm-hmm. And that way you can sort of observe everybody else and know that if something happens, you're still competent. And you can laugh at their behavior, okay? And then you can ask yourself, when you are drinking, how many people here are really drunk and how many are pretending to be drunk and laughing at me, okay? So I'm adding social pressure here, okay? Making people responsible for their behavior sometimes makes them pay more attention to their behavior. I mean, this is why we have, you know, laws against being doing things when you're drunk. Never go drinking without a sober person watching out for you. Okay, this is especially true for females because people put something in your drink and you might get into a situation you don't want to be in. Realize that drinking alcohol is not a rite of passage anymore. And realize that drinking alcohol does not make you look more mature anymore. That may have been true decades ago, but it's not true anymore. Mm-hmm. So be careful. The probability of having a drink is increased with every drink that you have. So you say, well, I'm going to stop at 4. By the time you get to 4, you say, wow, one more, why not? And on it goes. Remember also that if somebody has been over drinking and they pass out, you can't just leave them there because they have a stomach full of alcohol that continues to get absorbed into their blood. It can depress their breathing to the point where it kills them. Somebody passes out, you need to get the medical attention. Not just roll them on their side, but get the medical attention. So try not to kill yourself and try to keep your friends alive.
Simple as that.
Yeah.
My last question is, obviously at Wake Forest, we have like the Office of Wellbeing and the Thrive Office that set out to help people with like addictions and disorders and stuff like that. Do you think more has to be done for college students to like learn about the effects of alcohol?
Yeah, I do. I think that the administration here is doing a really good job of trying to address a problem that is endemic in every college in the almost every college in the country. Okay, what is it about you guys that makes you so susceptible to the social pressure of drinking? I mean, that's the real question. If you can be made to do dangerous things just to be cool, then maybe being cool isn't so cool. Okay, so when you think about it, I mean, just think about it logically, rationally, and ask yourself, do I really want to do that? Do I really want to be like that? Maybe not. So I think that a little bit more social pressure to avoid, I think that more opportunities for non-drinking things, but there's a lot of pressure to get drunk. I mean, the first weekend of the fall semester, for instance. And part of this is a Greek system issue.
Exactly.
But it's not entirely a Greek system issue. The parties that go on that weekend, you know, you get 100 people underage caught drinking at a party. We should know better, because that can be kind of dangerous. There's got to be a way to have fun that doesn't involve putting yourself in that situation. Mm-hmm. So, that's what I think.
So after interviewing Dr. Terry Blumenthal of the Psychology Department here at Wake Forest University, and Abby Anderson, a senior at Wake, who was also the event coordinator for the Neuroscience Club, we not only learned about the pharmacokinetics behind alcohol, but also how alcohol use disorders are being cultivated within the college population and how they are seen throughout college campuses. Furthermore, from speaking with Dr. Terry Blumenthal, we learned about different alcohol treatments, who we should make these treatments available to, and how to help people who deny even having a problem with alcohol in the first place. Join us next week when we dive into marijuana use throughout the Wake Forest community, and make sure to subscribe at the bottom of your screen if you haven't already. We'll see you next week on Wake Forest Today.